Hello, my name is Chip Lang, and you are listening to Total EM. For this podcast, we are going back to some point-of-care ultrasound or POCUS education, and we are going to talk about regional wall motion abnormalities and myocardial infarctions. Regional wall motion abnormalities, or RWMA, as it's sometimes abbreviated, is something that has been a little more of an advanced skill, if you will, but is still very beneficial because it can help us sometimes better catch more subtle MIs or sometimes be able to better identify a culprit lesion. It has some different roles, but I haven't talked about it yet on the podcast because, like I said, it's a little more advanced than what we usually talk about on the podcast, but thought it was very reasonable, especially with some relatively newer research on the subject. Now, some of you who have already learned POCUS may know that we do talk a little bit about regional wall motion abnormalities, and that's sometimes talking about like McConnell sign and pulmonary embolism. But otherwise, we tend to shy away from talking much about it in early classes just because it could be a little more challenging and it can be a little bit harder to see. So what is a regional wall motion abnormality? Well, think of it like this. As the heart contracts, the walls should thicken. But when you have a wall motion abnormality, part of the heart is not acting like the rest of it. So it can move less, which is hypokinesia, it can not move at all, which is akinesia, or it can move in the opposite direction, which is called dyskinesia. Anytime you have one portion of the wall not moving like the rest of it in a particular cardiac view, that could be related to a specific coronary artery. And there are three main ones that we're looking at: the left anterior descending, the left circumflex artery, and the right coronary artery. I've included in the show notes, which is definitely worth checking out, basically a quick description with some anatomical locations of each one of these. It's worth noting that I have basically three different ones listed on the website, two as still images, one as a GIF, and with them, they each have some subtle differences as far as what artery is tied to what location. It's broken down pretty well into like small segments. And some of them are going to be fairly consistent, but like I said, some of them are going to have some variation. So it's worth noting this and knowing that there's not an absolute. There seems to be some differences between the different charts that you may consult. So it's worth knowing this because it's not a perfect assessment, which I think ties in nicely with the paper that we're going to talk about today. The three main views that we're going to use to help us decide which parts of the heart have a regional wall motion abnormality are the apical four-chamber view, the parasternal long axis view, and then the parasternal short axis view. The parasternal short axis view, we're going to be looking at the papillary muscles and then just above and below on the parasternal short axis view. You could also use an apical two-chamber view, but it's used a little less commonly, but it's worth noting that this is a view that you can use to help you figure out what part of the heart is involved and therefore what coronary artery is most likely involved. If you have a little bit of difficulty conceptualizing this when you look at the still images, or maybe you're not completely sure about these cardiac windows, I did include on the show notes as well a YouTube clip from Ultrasound Podcast that goes over kind of a real quick 1 minute video on how to assess for wall motion abnormalities that's worth checking out. So now that you know the basic technique and what we're looking for, let's talk a little bit about the evidence. There was a paper done in 2018 by Reardon et al. In the American Journal of Emergency Medicine that used speckle tracking, but has really found that it probably wasn't ready yet for prime time and that it was a small retrospective study that really wasn't very sensitive or specific for the diagnosis of acute coronary syndrome. Now, I did include a link to the Ultrasound Gel podcast and blog post that goes a lot more in detail with it. But since most of us don't even have the option of speckle tracking, I didn't want to talk too much about that paper, but instead focus on a more recent paper published by Kraft et al., also in the American Journal of Emergency Medicine, that was published in 2019 to discuss regional wall motion abnormalities without using speckle tracking. Now, what they found is that there was a positive likelihood ratio of 11.5, which is pretty solid, and a negative likelihood ratio of 0.13, which is also pretty decent. And that was for identifying regional wall motion abnormality in patients with a myocardial infarction. They did use a secondary outcome that I thought was helpful, and that was the accuracy of localization, for which the positive likelihood ratio was 5.4 and the negative likelihood ratio was 0.13, which in this small study of 69 patients is not terrible. But remember how I was talking about how there's some conflict and some, you know, basically some discrepancies between these different ones as far as which coronary artery may be involved based on what location, which is why I think the positive and negative likelihood ratios were better for an overall regional wall motion abnormality versus a specific location. Now, the study used all residents, 5 PGY1s, 3 PGY2s, and a PGY3. And they did this after some short training, which I think helps reflect how easy it is to do this just like most POCUS applications. However, there are some limitations that we need to acknowledge. And that's that the study, most importantly, was being used only in patients with ST elevation myocardial infarction or STEMIs. I think this is understandable in a decent study to still look at, even though this was limited to STEMI patients, because it is an investigative study, and they wanted to ensure high incidence rates of true positives versus having a whole bunch of false negative patients for in-STEMIs, which, as many people in the FOMED world is moving to, I'm more of a fan of OMI versus NOMI, but that's a separate discussion. Like I said, in this paper, they use STEMI as their criteria for inclusion. However, in pragmatic application, I think we're going to find that less of us are going to use this ultrasound study in patients with STEMI versus those that do not have as clear cut of a picture. And it's worth noting that in STEMI patients, this could potentially delay care. And really, we should only be using ultrasound if we think there are other reasons or other things that may be going on in addition to the STEMI, such as an aortic dissection or a pericardial effusion. However, I can understand the theory that if you have patients with a positive STEMI with a regional wall motion abnormality, that patients most likely who do not have a STEMI and have a regional wall motion abnormality most likely have an MI as well. But I don't think we should over extrapolate the data on this until we maybe have a little bit more to back us up for certain. But again, in the right clinical context, I think it's worth keeping this in mind. Some other limitations for us to note is the same with like usual ultrasound studies, and that this is often a single center with a convenience population such as this one, and that there's potential for bias when performing the ultrasound because we know these are STEMI patients. So maybe this is a little less applicable than the real world, but I don't think that's necessarily true because we're going to see the EKG and we know that this is a STEMI patient, at least based on EKG criteria. So I don't know if that changes how beneficial this exam is overall, unless we're trying to include the pragmatic approach of, can this be used in other types of patients? Finally, it's worth noting, as always, potentially, that this is a user-dependent skill, but what exams aren't? So what does this mean for me with regional wall motion abnormalities and MIs? I think we do need some stronger evidence still to support the routine practice, but I think this is a great start. I think we're finding more than we did with the speckle tracking study, which is why I was excited to see this, because it shows that as long as we're seeing a regional wall motion abnormality, there most likely is a myocardial infarction going on, and maybe the localization isn't as helpful yet. But I think the big reason why is because with mapping, we just don't have consistency yet, and maybe we need to look into this a little bit more. As always, I think, like I said, research is going to be the key in seeing what future applications would be beneficial. But for right now, I think I'll use this still in certain patients and more or less recognize that a regional wall motion abnormality should be concerning in the right patient. So let's say that you find this interesting. You haven't done an ultrasound class in a while, or maybe ever at all, and you want to learn more about ultrasound. Our friends at Practical POCUS have a new ultrasound course that has just been released, and it's in St. Louis, Missouri, June 7th through 9th. What I think this is super cool about this one is that it is at the family fun and friendly St. Louis Zoo. And no, we won't necessarily be ultrasounding animals, although we will have adults and children for you to ultrasound in the class. And I think this can be a lot of fun still, just because there are great opportunities. This is a great place to go with family or friends because you're going to explore the zoo during your downtime. And like I said, we're going to have some fun activities included in the mix there. And we're going to give plenty of time, free time, for you all to explore the zoo. What's even more impressive is that we're working on an additional online on-demand course that you will take in advance to help further prepare you so that way you get the most hands-on time once you come to the St. Louis Zoo. And that means you're going to get a total of about 40 hours of CME all for one low price. And you still have the option, like previous ultrasound courses, to buy a pocket ultrasound machine specifically for certain right now, the Butterfly IQ. So if you want to learn more, check that out. Go to practicalpocus.com/zoo. And we are looking forward to seeing people at the course, just like we have for other courses in the past. I don't want to dive too much more into that just because I don't want to make this into a big advertisement, but that's my plug for this ultrasound podcast. And until next time, continue to provide total care everywhere.